Hello and welcome to the Designing Education Podcast. Today we're picking up where we left off in our last conversation with Carrie, Allie, Violet, and Sean Peschel, and talking more about New Hampshire's Extended Learning Opportunities effort and what it takes to implement it well. We can't wait to jump in. But before we start, we want to take a moment to remind you to subscribe to the Designing Education Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We're available on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, just to name a few. Subscribe to the Designing Education Podcast and never miss an episode. Welcome to the Designing Education Podcast series. I'm Dr. Robert Balfance, Director of the Pathways to Adult Success Program and the Everyone Graduate Center at Johns Hopkins University. I'm delighted to have you join us today. This is the second part of a two-part discussion with Sean and Carrie, and the latest in a series of conversations we're having with education leaders, thinkers, and practitioners from across the country. We'll talk about what it will take to create an education system that truly empowers all young people and sets them on a pathway to long-term success. To pick off where we last left off, in the first session of our two-part episode, Sean and Carrie talked to us about New Hampshire's Extended Learning Opportunity effort, which gives students high school credit for learning and skill building that takes place outside the school walls and often the school day. Today, we're going to dig deeper into how extended learning opportunities work at the school level and what it takes to effectively offer them. Joining us again today for part two of the conversation are Carrie, Allie Violet, president of the ELL Network and the ELL coordinator from Sanborn Regional High School in New Hampshire, and Sean Peschel, ELL coordinator from Oyster River School and vice president of the ELL Network. Welcome, Carrie and Sean.
Thank you, Bob. Good to see you.
Thank you.
In the first part of our two-part episode, we started off asking what was a good day in high school. For a second part of the episode, I'm going to switch it up and say, in the work you do now with extended learning opportunities, what is a good day?
It's a good day when you're not in the building and not in high school, when you're out of the building, out in the community, working with students and their community partners in their learning experiences.
Every day is a great day. I say this all the time, that I truly have the best job in a school that you possibly could have, and I truly mean that. Every day helping kids find passions and engage and work on things and then connect with community partners and expand that connection between our school and our community is just amazing.
Sean, can you briefly remind our audience what the New Hampshire Extended Learning Opportunity effort is?
Yes. Extended learning opportunities are a chance for students to individualize, personalize, and customize their high school experience through academic growth and career development, through exposure on field trips, or exploration of job shadows, informational interviews, or even work of internships in advanced studies. That's student-focused, student-driven, and student-designed.
Wonderful. Carrie, can you share a little bit with us about what the ELO Network does?
Yes, the ELO Network connects everybody in our state who does similar work and gives them opportunities to learn and grow. We're expanding what we do, offering professional development, especially to our newer coordinators, because in the ELO world, our coordinators could come from a teaching background, from a school counseling background, and maybe even from a community partner background. So it's helping guide them through the process of what will work for them in their building, knowing just like an ELO for students, everything's different. ELOs in our state are different in every school.
And about how many schools in New Hampshire are part of your network?
I believe, Sean, correct me if I'm wrong, there's 85 schools. So in the state of New Hampshire, every high school has to have a policy of how they will handle extended learning opportunities. So it's written into our state law. So there is one person that's designated to do that in every building. Now, some are at a very low entry level, and some do this as, again, have 140, 200 kids interacting in these roles every day.
Yeah, what I think it's quite powerful about the New Hampshire effort is it really combines this legislative framework. I mean, it's backed by legislation, it's shaped, and then you've built up an infrastructure to actually support school-level implementation of that legislative framework.
And what's been nice about it, too, it's been so organic. So even though it's been legislation kind of making it happen, it just says you have to have it happen. How you have it happen is up to each individual school district or school itself on how they want to implement it and create that. So it's been quite interesting in that sense, which when we as a network, I think, try to standardize that or try to have some commonalities amongst schools. And as we mentioned in our last episode, with our regional structure, you know, State of New Hampshire is, you know, 3 hours from top to bottom and maybe 2 hours across, depending upon which road you take. But we try to have at least the regions kind of be similarly focused and working collaboratively together. And we cross regions too, just because we're in the Seacoast region doesn't mean we don't reach out to the North Country or the Southwest or the central area of our state. We do work with everybody collaboratively.
That's great. And Sean, can you tell us a little bit more about the role of the ELO coordinator at a school?
Sure. I see it, the ELO coordinator kind of as that academic social worker where they kind of bring everybody to the table. But the first person to come to the table is the student, kind of talking about what they want to learn or do or take part in. You know, again, being student driven, student design, student focused. We then reach out and say, you know, well, what area of focus do you want to be in? You know, is it social studies? Is it math? Is it English? What area or, you know, or career driven experience? And then also, which category does it fall into? Is it advanced studies, independent coursework, an internship, a job shadow? Kind of get all that groundwork of foundational information laid out. Then asking the student of, you know, is there a teacher mentor that you have in mind that you want to work with? Do you have somebody that you've already reached out to in the community to be a community partner to provide you that community experience? And again, I think it's teaching those social skills or those soft skills of networking, collaboration, communication. Even though I am the coordinator that kind of oversees the process, it's really giving that drive, that steering wheel and the gas pedal to the student to kind of initiate and drive the experience as much as possible. And then also the teacher mentor and the community partner, we're providing the place and space for the student to learn, but we're also kind of the bumpers in the gutter of the bowling alley to kind of keep that ball straight as they get on and hit the pins type thing too. We never want to see a student fumble or fail. But again, through those fumblings and failings, we have learning that takes place too. So it's also always a good thing to trip and stumble sometimes because you get right back up and keep on going on the experience.
Yeah, I mean, it really strikes me how, I mean, it seems in a way straightforward the role, but also it seems a radical departure from traditional organization of high schools where basically somebody else decided the program, maybe the school board, maybe the superintendent, maybe the principal, and everybody else is just implementing, right? But you're actually co-creating with the students and with the opportunities. That's very exciting.
Yeah. It could be taking competencies that are already in place from courses and kind of making a repackaging in a different way, or starting from scratch and creating competencies from scratch with the student. And also Bobby mentioned too, the teachers, when ELOs first came about in our state, there was fear from teachers across the state that they're going to lose their jobs. If students can earn credit not in their classroom, they'll no longer be employed. But that has not happened. There's been no staff member that I'm aware of in New Hampshire that has lost their job because of ELOs. It's actually enhanced it because now teachers are engaging with students beyond their own classroom too. That, okay, if I've taught you, you know, ceramics one and ceramics two, I want to really work with these kids that want a ceramics three and kind of give them more passion to be in the profession too, which has been kind of reinvigorating and re-energizing for some of our staff members too, to enhance and expand upon what we're actually already doing in our schools.
Oh, I so agree with that, Sean, because we had that fear in this building, and it's by educating those teachers and getting them to connect with students in different ways, it's made them better teachers in their traditional classrooms, as well as, hey, I have this idea. Do you think you have a few ELO kids that might want to work with me on this? And that's really, in the first session, I talked about the submarine project. That's really how like that got going. And things like that. So it's really has given our teachers a little bit of a push and engaged them more in the teaching role. So which has been awesome to see that evolution.
And taking on that extra role of being a teacher mentor for an ELO, it's beyond our staff members' responsibilities. Like they're still stuck. I say stuck in air quotes, stuck to the traditional classroom of so many blocks a day. But if a teacher wants to take on an ELO student or students, it's above and beyond. So it's kind of
right.
It's kind of nice to see that growing too in our building.
Because like in our buildings, our teachers don't get paid to be a mentor. Some schools do that, a small stipend, but in our building they don't. So it's a volunteer.
Yeah. And we've had ELOs now, you know, from the beginning when the regulations were established, but also just having the position as a full-time position for about 6 years. This is the sixth year of the position. I've been the only one that has held that position, which has been kind of nice. And we at Oyster River kind of rolled the program out slowly. We didn't want to open the floodgates and have students try to earn credits in alternative ways right from the beginning. So we kind of slow rolled it out. And this year, ironically, the high school's theme is Discover the Possibilities. So now once a month, we have students who are doing ELOs or doing something above and beyond or things that they've learned from our building, kind of presenting at our staff meetings. So out of the hour staff meeting, the last 5 minutes is dedicated to student spotlight. And many of our staff members wish that the whole hour was dedicated to student spotlights. But yeah, just kind of seeing and hearing what students are doing, it's kind of engaged in like, the staff members didn't know what was happening. And you know, maybe a little purposefully, we want to kind of maybe keep it a little bit of a secret. But now that we're getting it out, people are wanting to do more and more and take advantage of all the possibilities that our school currently has to offer.
Yeah, and that's amazing. You know, when you think about it, right, the sort of seat time in the Carnegie unit in this, you know, and it sort of came about in a time and place, as I said, when like the only place you could really in a mass way learn academic knowledge was from a teacher. It sort of gave teachers that monopoly, right, on learning. And you could see a little where some might be hesitant to give that monopoly up. But another thing seat time did, though, is it gave American U.S. teachers many more hours teaching than doing other work than other nations. So our teachers end up teaching all day and have very little time to work with colleagues or to do other work. So you could see how it'd be nervous at the beginning, but you could see how breaking that seat time and that strict schedule could also free teachers up to be more innovative and creative.
Oh, for sure. Definitely. I think it's also working in structures too, that here we have students that are leaving our campus. What? They're not supervised with an adult with them at all times? Like, no, a staff member is not with them. They may be with a community partner. We'll make sure they get the background check as a volunteer for the school district. And are they transporting themselves? So all those legalities and litigation that could take place, that's what ELOs is kind of in pushing that line a little bit more. Like, no, it's okay that the student can leave our building on their own and by themselves. And as long as they go to where they said they're going to be going. And I think here you've got like an electronic check-in system that you can know where they're at and so on and so forth, a little radar in your classroom of sorts.
They have an app on their phone, so they check in and it gives me actually GPS location that they're at, where they're telling me they're at, not home. So, and then when they're done for the day, it's kind of like just, you know, checking in and out of work. And a thing just for accountability.
Another key piece of the ELO coordinator is to make sure that the sites that students are going to are safe sites. We state of New Hampshire has a pretty strong Department of Labor, so all the DOL forms need to be approved, that your program's approved, the site's approved, that their safety plan's on file with the state, that their workman's compensation's on file with the state, so on and so forth. So all the environments that our students are being sent to have been pre-checked by the ELO coordinators to make sure it's a safe site, and the individuals that they're working with are dubbed as volunteers for your district, so on and so forth.
What are some of the challenges school face in creating a strong ELO program?
Some of the challenges would be if your district is not open-minded, in my opinion. If you have an administrative team, a school board, a community who's open-minded to allow you to create these opportunities and to be a little creative, then you're able to do your job and to do it well. Career connected learning in our building is a priority. By the time that our students graduate, they have had at least 10 opportunities for career connected learning just in our advisory program through our career speakers, career interviews, or job shadows, starting when they're freshmen. So we actually have that requirement built in. But I would, and then on top of any other career connective learning that we do that just naturally happens in our building. So I would say the challenge would be if you didn't have a supportive district administrative team that sees that vision and sees the importance in the students taking ownership in their learning, then that would be a wall. We're lucky, I think, in our districts that we have that support. And we have that support to be able to just explore every day. If I come up with a new idea, they're like, okay, let's try it. And I'm like, okay, here we go. Let's do something new. So it's just so nice to have that support piece.
Yeah, definitely huge. And I think financial support too comes into play also, where Carrie and I are very fortunate that our 100% role is the ELO coordinator. Some of those districts that may be struggling financially, they may roll it out slowly. We're tacking it on to a teaching position or tack it on to a school counseling position. But as that program grows, as the numbers and the population and the data shows the growth, you then hopefully can bring on that person to be more of 100% full time, so on and so forth. So it is a struggle and a barrier. And I think one of the things that we as a network are trying to do is that, you know, collaboratively share our resources of community partners. But also if a school doesn't have an ELO coordinator, for whatever reason, they don't have one, I've offered, and I think Carrie has too, offered for us to partner with other schools and take on another school's student as ours and walk them through the process, so on and so forth. So that transferability, that if Oyster River has overseen this experience, they can transfer to their ABC high school's transcript and be, you know, transcribed and towards graduation as credit earned, which would be nice. I think another barrier too that could be is that one that I face is that currently ELOs in our district are only for elective-based credit. We're looking to move into the required course, required credits for graduation area and arena. Again, it's just a slow rollout, making sure we're getting everything kind of lined up, all of our ducks in a row, are ready for the next level of it. Did the same thing with internships. I didn't jump into internships right away. We did more internal inside the building type stuff, those independent courseworks, advanced studies. And then now that that's showing proof in the pudding, we're now, okay, let's roll out into the community and build that community support too. So it's all about how you roll it out. I think slow and steady, you win the race overall.
Yeah, no, those seem real, but it also seems like there's a lot of momentum building and, you know, just sort of the proof is in the pudding. And, you know, one curiosity I have is that we've talked a lot of students being very excited about this and feeling engaged, particularly sometimes students that have become sort of disengaged because of COVID or the pandemic. But do you run across students that are like strong defenders of traditional learning and like don't want to leave the building, want to just be taught by a teacher all the time?
We do. I do. And then that's their choice and they don't have to choose. Doing an ELO is a choice. And just like when they do course signups, ELO is listed on their list of availabilities. And if they want to take that or if they'd rather take a traditional classroom, again, they have that choice. Oftentimes, though, they come around and at some point they say, well, can I do this? And can we do it in the summer? Maybe they don't want to give up their traditional electives or their courses that they have during the year. I'm lucky enough that I also am hired throughout the summer. So if a student wants to do an internship or an ELO opportunity, I'm there to guide and mentor them through the summer. So
that's great that it builds through the summer.
Yeah, not all schools do that, but something I pushed for a long time ago because our students were doing some really great work or into different businesses, and then they weren't getting credit for it. Well, why not? You're learning and you're doing this. Why shouldn't we reward you?
Yeah, and what's nice about you being year-round and is that ELOs in my school district do not work in the time frame of semesters and year-long courses. You know, traditionally, a semester-long class is half credit, full year-long course is a full credit. You can start an ELO whenever you start it, and you end whenever you end it. No matter if it takes you a year and a half to do five competencies, it's still, air quotes, still only worth a half a credit. It's based on the student progressing through, student voice and choice, student agency. Students in my building could do an ELO as a part of their day. You know, there's seven periods in their schedule overall. You know, we have a rotating schedule, yada, yada, yada. But it could be one of those, you know, boxes filled in, or it could be above and beyond. It could be on the weekend, could be in the evenings, whenever. I always tell students that, you know, if you have to take a pause from your ELO because life gets busy maybe with your job or sports or other academic commitments, the ELO can take the back burner for a little bit. Just let me know, check in with me, let me know it's going to take a pause. But make sure your traditional courses are still moving along because there's still deadlines and due dates and, you know, progress reports and quarter ends, so on and so forth. But unfortunately, what ends up happening sometimes is the students get so engaged with the ELO, the traditional courses are the ones that take the back burner because they're more engaged in what they want to be engaged in versus what's being told they need to be engaged in. But we find that happy balance. And again, that's the academic social worker kind of coming into play and making sure that everything's going smoothly and in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what you just said, Sean, is in a way both so logical and still in a way so mind-bending for everyone who's been so steeped in traditional high school schedules and time frames. The idea that you could start your ELO at any time and end it at any time, and it's not bound by a semester or a quarter, you know, or a year or the, you know, not over the summer. It just shows us how ingrained those schedules have gotten in our mind that we would see that to be so mind-bending, you know?
Mm-hmm. And again, still one of those transferable skills of the student doing that time management piece is that when am I ready to do it for a checkpoint? When am I ready for a check-in or a benchmark thing? It's, again, putting them in the driver's seat and putting them in control and earning those skills of networking, collaboration, communication, time management skills.
And I think that's a great lead into my next question, which is how do students get credit? How do they show what they did in their extended learning opportunity?
So part of what they do, we have what we call the four pillars of an extended learning opportunity, and that's a research, reflection, a project, and a presentation. And for us in this building, our students have to do a presentation to demonstrate their growth and their learning of what they did in their competencies, what they set for their competencies. We do a day each semester where that's actually our staff meeting. All the staff members are put into different rooms. I divvy up the kids, and they listen to our students give a presentation and show their products about what they learned, what their growth was, what their competencies were, and what their next steps are. It is honestly the favorite days of the year in this building. I actually had a couple other schools this in January come to visit us so they could see what we do. The kids are like so super nervous in the beginning. They're like, oh, I got to talk about what I do. But once they start talking, you just hear that pride and that engagement of, this is what I learned. And now I learned this is not what I want to do the rest of my life. Or this is, yes, this is solidified. I want to go to nursing school, or I want to go to be an auto mechanic. So it's just them defending their learning is the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, that sounds, I mean, I want to come see it. And what really strikes me about what you're describing is that we know that nationally, despite lots of efforts of many amazing counselors, guidance counselors, all, you know, college counselors, still many, many of our high school students get very little guidance on what to do after high school and very little experiential taste of it, right? So they just have some loose idea in their mind, and they get accepted and get to college, then find it's the wrong thing, right? And so this is just this idea of getting that learning by doing right before you have to do it just seems both so logical and far too rare.
And very similar at Oyster River High School also, this didn't, you know, we don't have a day dedicated to it. Some districts have, you know, a whole day dedicated to the presentations. You know, Cary School has the staff meeting dedicated to it. In mine, it's more personalized in the sense that the student, when they're ready to defend their knowledge or show proof that they've learned, they come to me and say, I'm ready to set up my presentation. I let students know that, you know, required around the table are myself, the student, and their teacher, mentor, community partner, whoever their ELO team was. And beyond that, it's their choice. They can invite aunts, uncles, cousins. They can fill the whole auditorium if they want to, or keep it to a small little classroom. It's not meant to be stressful or anxiety provoking. It's them sharing their experience. Like, so Cary mentioned, like, they just, from the beginning, they have some nervousness, but that kind of quickly dissolves and goes away. And it's just kind of a show and tell of what I've learned, and showing their products and bring to life those competencies and how they've met those competencies.
And these presentations could be something like a slides in a formal presentation where they're standing up, or they could be taking us out into the parking lot and showing us how they did trained a dog for five different commands, or taking me through an ambulance and showing me the steps when they get to a situation of how they deal with everything. So, I mean, we had a student did firefighting, and he said, okay, put on a timer, and we timed him, and he on his firefighting suit as if he was going to a call. So they can demonstrate their learning in so many different ways.
Yeah, that's wonderful. All right, so here's my last big question. You both of you, Cary and Sean, have been working this for a while and learned a lot, put a lot of effort into it, had a lot of hard-won lessons. So what would be your advice for other states and within them, you know, schools within those states that are interested in starting an extended learning opportunity?
Interesting you bring that up of working with other states. So one of our border states is Maine. And for about, I would say, what, maybe 5 years or so, Cary, they've been coming to our meetings?
I would say five years.
Yeah, so the people that have kind of have similar roles, maybe they're community collaborators or school to work coordinators, they were coming to our state meetings and even our regional meetings too, because Cary and I are on I'm more on the border of Maine. But Maine has actually launched ELOs in their state. Their Department of Education, I believe, funded 25 ELO coordinators statewide, grant funded, where districts can apply to get an ELO coordinator, funding for an ELO coordinator. And now this is their first year of kind of having their own ELO network of their own. We're going to be actually going to their next month, going to their state conference and kind of listening, participating in whatever way we can support them. That's one of the interesting things that Maine put some financial backing behind their ELO rollout. The state of New Hampshire did not. It was a local control and kind of do it on your own type thing. But it's been quite interesting to see them and work collaboratively with Maine. We have some friends of ours on the, or some coordinators on the Vermont side that work with Vermont businesses. Same thing with Massachusetts with our Mass border. They work with Massachusetts businesses. The Mass Department of Labor is a little bit more lenient than the New Hampshire Department of Labor. So it said, hey, if you can get kids in Mass, go down to Mass a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But again, we still do the work. We want to have safe spots and safe locations. We still follow all the New Hampshire regulations. But yeah, I think working collaboratively across states has been helpful because we are a small state. And then the New England region is very a collaborative area. So
the cool thing of working with Maine, we really were kind of Maine's mentors because most of what they have done and rolled out has mirrored exactly what we do in our schools. So having that connection has been really great. And we are actually in conversations of maybe having some conferences between the two states where we can really help each other out. So we're excited about that.
That's wonderful. That's really wonderful to see it growing. Thank you, Carrie and Sean. As we close out today's episodes, are there any last words you'd like to share with the audience or to let them know where they can learn more about what we've discussed in our episodes, our two episodes together?
I think, again, just two websites to kind of have our listeners go to is the NHELONetwork.com, which is our organization's website, and also go to Beyond Classroom, BeyondClassroom.org for other examples that have actually taken place in New Hampshire that you can take back, replicate, and use in your own districts.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So as we end here, I'd like to thank Carrie and Sean again for joining me in this two-part discussion and for sharing what they are learning about enabling students to learn anywhere at any time and receiving high school credit for it. More and more states, as we've heard, are starting to chip away at the tyranny of seat time in the Carnegie unit. But no state has gone as far as New Hampshire in creating not only a legislative opportunity, but school-level infrastructure to enable it to happen. As we work together to design schools that work for all students of the 21st century, being able to incorporate the learning opportunities that are available and occur outside of the formal school day or the school walls into the formal preparation we require of students to graduate from high school and apply for post-secondary schooling and training will be essential. That's why we are so excited to be able to engage Carrie and Sean, two on-the-ground educators working to make learning anywhere, anytime real in our two-part episode. What their work shows is that it is being done, which tells us all it can be done. Before we let you go, we want to ask you that you please subscribe to the Designing Education to stay up to date on all the revolutionary work happening in education. If you're enjoying the show, leave us a 5-star review. Also, please share the show with a friend or colleague or on social media. This has been Robert Balfance from the Everyone Graduate Center and the Pathways to Adult Success Project. Thank you everyone for listening, inviting you to listen to the other episodes in our Designing Education series, wherever you listen to podcasts. Onward and be well.